Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
The Bakersfield 3 is proudly part of the Acast Creator Network. Love makes us do all kinds of things we never think we'd do. It can make us question our very being. It can be all-consuming. But perhaps nothing will make you do something you never thought you'd do the way betrayal and heartbreak can. Such was the case for Matthew Vandecastiel. You may remember Matthew Vandecastiel was good friends with Matthew Queen. And when Queen was dating Bailey, Vandecastiel was dating Sarah. They were two sets of good friends dating each other, which was great, until Matt Vandecastiel got arrested, and a couple days later, Bailey went missing. That was the end of April 2018 that suddenly Queen and Sarah found themselves without their significant others, and apparently found comfort in each other. And within a couple of months, Sarah was living with Queen, and soon after, pregnant with his baby. So naturally, that was the end of Matt Queen and Matt Vandecastiel's friendship. And had Matt Queen not betrayed Matt Vandecastiel like that, had Sarah not broken his heart, Matt Vandecastiel likely would have never said certain things on a recorded phone line from jail.
That Vandecastiel jail phone call fueled the case significantly at that time. Ultimately, was the key piece that helped solve the case.
I'm Olivia Lavoisse, and this is The Bakersfield 3. In the last episode, you heard jail calls between Sarah and Matthew Queen from the summer of 2019 after Queen was arrested during the River standoff. This set of jail calls you're about to hear between Sarah and Matthew Vandecastiel took place 1 year earlier in summer 2018, just a couple months after Bailey and Micah disappeared. Now, before the call between Sarah and Vandecastiel that blew the case wide open, there were some other interesting calls that led up to it. At this point, Vandecastiel didn't know Sarah and his friend Queen were seemingly hooking up behind his back.
I have this dream about Bailey.
Yeah?
And it's really got me fucked up, babe.
Why?
And now I'm just trying to figure out what the fuck happened, but I figured I should stay the fuck out of it, too, because she always talked about, like, and the ones that always followed her and people that have followed her before and, like, people that have followed Micah, and everyone's always like, oh, you're crazy, Micah, and Micah's actually not that crazy.
Everyone and now, already knows you know, where Micah is. Everyone already knows where Micah went. Everyone does.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, which is why I gotta stay the fuck out of it too, babe, but like, that dream has me fucked
no
up.
No shit. Yeah, I have a feeling that Bailey's gone.
I don't know. I don't think so.
You need to not be anywhere around it.
Okay.
You know
I'm just, okay, yeah.
Right.
Did I just talk to my...
You don't want to push, try, or put your nose in any of that.
I know I need to keep my nose out of it. And,
With me being in here.
Yes, babe, okay. I will. I want to talk to one of my cousins who's a detective, and I want to tell him, like, kind of what's going on, what I think.
Baby, trust me. Stay out of it.
Okay. I know. It's probably best. Because considering two people have gone missing over this shit, you know?
Yeah.
At the time of those calls, Sarah and Matthew Van de Castiel were still together, or so he thought. A couple weeks later, that all blew up, resulting in the call that ended up being a treasure trove for Sergeant Garrett. You might remember hearing a part of it before in an earlier episode. It started out normal enough. Sarah and Van de Castiel were talking about Game of Thrones, before it turned into Sarah saying she couldn't have her life on hold and wait for him while he was behind bars.
This is what God wants. He took you away from me for a reason. Because you can't be in my life right now.
It sucks. It really does.
I know. It does.
You don't want to know why it sucks so much, though?
Why?
The main reason I'm sitting in here, the main reason is because I won't give up other people. And they get to sit out there and hang out with you and be around you.
Don't be like that.
To refresh your memory, Van de Castiel was in jail for trying to confront a guy at a hotel at gunpoint.
Because I won't give up who else was at the motel, who was driving the car, everyone that was involved. I sit in here.
You've done many other things that you should be in there for.
I did what I had to do to take care of us, and now I'm paying for it.
It turned out the other guy at the motel that day was Matthew Queen, and Sarah was their getaway driver. But seeing as at the time they were his best friend and girlfriend, Matthew Van de Castiel refused to give them up, which probably contributed to his fury when he seemed to discover later on this call that Queen and Sarah were shacking up together.
So are you really living at your aunt's and aunt and uncle's?
Yes.
For real, for on your...
Yes.
On your sister's life, and I swear to God.
Matthew.
Just say it.
No.
What are you saying then?
With a friend.
Who?
It doesn't fucking matter.
Is it Matt?
No.
Swear to God?
Matthew.
Swear to God.
No.
It is then. Tell that motherfucker he's a dead man when I get out.
Matt.
I swear to God.
You need to stop. You need to fucking pray more.
Hey, and I'm gonna tell you straight up. Bailey's in the same fucking place that Mike is. And if you remember where Mike is because you were at my fucking house that night, you're probably gonna end up the same way if you do him dirty.
Why are you talking like that?
Why do you think I don't want you around that fool?
Matt.
Just saying. Hey, and I'm gonna put it even way better. He's going to be in prison because I can roll on him.
Matt,
both
I'm
of
gonna
you,
hang
actually.
Up.
They're looking for both of you.
Matt.
So, how about you guys both remember that when you guys are out there fucking my life over? If you loved me, why the fuck would you move in with him?
I'm telling you, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Swear to fucking, put it, swear to God, put that on God.
I swear to God.
I can't.
I'm trying to be a good person, okay? I want you to be a good person, too.
Yeah. I should be a good person and just confess all the sins. I should just come clean about everything.
Matt, calm down, okay? You know I love you.
Yeah, but you love... If I love the person you're living with more than me, though.
No, I love you.
I thought you were better than this, though, sir. I really thought you were going to ride it out with me. You answer less. It's harder to get a hold of you. I don't get letters anymore. Like, you've been...
I sent you letters last week.
I sent it last week.
Matt, I love you, and I'm here for you. But don't talk to me like that anymore.
What, don't talk to you like, well, fuck. Maybe if I was just to, you know, confess everything and be a good person and, you know, say...
Why don't you stop?
Oh, wait.
Stop, Matt, okay?
You guys would be
Matt,
with
stop.
Me.
Matt,
I
want to
be the only motherfucker going to
Matt, I love you. Bye.
The caller has hung up.
Remember, this call took place early on in the investigation of Bailey and Micah's disappearances. At this point, some people in law enforcement were telling Jane and Cheryl that they thought Bailey and Micah were in Mexico drinking margaritas and living their best lives together. That damning call between Vanda Castile and Sarah didn't come to light until several months later, when Sergeant Garrett started digging into the case and, on a hunch, requested the recordings of all of Vanda Castile's jail calls. He had to listen to over 300 phone calls about all sorts of irrelevant things. And then there it was, proof Vanda Castile had information. But by the time Sergeant Garrett was on to him and showed up to speak with him in prison, Vanda Castile had had almost 5 months to cool off after learning his girlfriend was dumping him for his good friend. So he wasn't exactly ready to spill his guts the way it had sounded on that heated phone call, which was disappointing, you could say, for the investigator assisting Sergeant Garrett with the interview, Lieutenant Christopher Bagby.
See, here's the thing, Mr. Vanda Castile. We could play cat and fucking mouse all day.
I know.
Listen to me. I could play cat and mouse all day. It's kind of my thing, to be honest with you. I enjoy the pursuit of the whole thing. The reality of your situation is that we didn't randomly appear here hoping to fish for fucking catfish, right? We're not looking for fucking bullshit, right? Major fucking ordeal to get into a fucking prison to talk to some dude, right? It sucks, actually. And I hate prisons more than anything because they smell bad. The people who work here are dickheads. Everything about it I don't like. You know the drill, right? Can we be honest with each other?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the reason that we are here is because of this shit on the phone.
Vanda Castile kept insisting anything he said on those phone calls to Sarah was just based off of his gut feelings and that he doesn't actually know anything. To which Lieutenant Bagby told him, let's see how that explanation holds up for you in court.
All they gotta do is fucking listen to it, right? They'll play that shit for the motherfucking jury. Just play it. And then they're gonna be like, that fucking dude knows what's fucking going on. No doubt about it. You're kind of fucked, bro.
Garrett and Bagby continued to reiterate to Vanda Castile this was his chance to try to save himself by telling them what he knew. And furthermore, why would he continue to protect someone who'd screwed him over?
Matthew Queen is, if correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not trying to be a personal dickhead, is running around with your girl.
Ex.
But she wasn't your ex when he started running around with her, as I understand it. Right? And I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I'm just saying this is a reality of your life. He stole your girl while you're doing his time.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
The interview went on like this for a while before Vanda Castile finally said he'd tell the truth. His story came out in bits and pieces, each detail a struggle to pull out of him. After several hours, Garrett and Bagby had what they needed and left Vanda Castile with this parting gift.
So you didn't know that Sarah's pregnant?
You should ask him if he wants to watch it.
So
make him watch it.
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, they did a gender reveal thing I was going to show you.
You ever seen those? Or like this
yeah,
new
I did
thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're doing one.
Yeah, I want to see it.
After playing the video of Queen and Sarah's gender reveal, Bagby and Garrett said their goodbyes, and Sergeant Garrett got to work.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
As someone who hears about crime day in and day out for a living, I try to find a balance between being aware of the terrible things that can happen to people, especially women, while also not trying to let those thoughts take up too much space in my head. I strive to be conscious of safety without being fearful. And what really helps me strike that balance is having a home security system. When I turn my Simply Safe alarm on before bed, I just sleep better, and that alone makes it worth it to me. Your home is where you should feel the safest, and having that sense of security is really nice. especially when you're binging true crime all the time, like I know a lot of you listening probably are. Some great things about SimpliSafe is it's really easy to set up. There's 24/7 customer service, there's no contracts, and there's a 60-day money-back guarantee. SimpliSafe has given me and many of my listeners peace of mind, and you deserve that too. Right now, you can get 20% off of any new SimpliSafe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplisafe.com/Bakersfield. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. So unbeknownst to myself and the moms, things were happening. From our perspective, though, at the time, things had been quiet since Queen's arrest for the various unrelated incidents. As we were going on a year and a half since Bailey and Micah's disappearances and James's murder, there was no sense of resolution, which made it that much harder for me to leave my first love, my job working as a reporter in Bakersfield, and take a new job out of state that fall in 2019. The last couple of weeks I was in Bakersfield, I sent a jailhouse interview request to Queen every single day. And every day, like clockwork, the jail would fax it back with the box checked next to inmate declines. Eventually, Queen actually wrote next to the checked box, "Please stop sending these." I had to accept it. I was leaving with no new info. But the hardest part was telling the moms. Even though I wasn't sure it was necessarily professional, I felt they'd broken down a barrier and I'd really connected with them. Initially, I'd fought it, thinking it was blurring a line of me being a reporter versus friend. When they'd come to see me at court and Di would pick pieces of lint off my dress or smooth down a piece of my hair, Cheryl would take a messy stack of papers out of my hand and put them in order, and Jane would lecture me that I needed to be careful when driving on the freeway to go to LA to see my boyfriend. "Can't he just come here so you don't have to do that dangerous drive?" she'd ask. They were inherently motherly to everyone in their path. But to me, it felt special. In a town where I wanted to be regarded as a serious crime reporter, they treated me as such, but they also treated me like someone they cared about. So leaving them was hard, but the truth was, I knew they didn't need me. They'd become better investigators than I could ever be, and they were just as, if not more, media savvy than myself. And most importantly, they had each other. They'd become a little family.
Kind of an understatement to say the three of you have a special bond.
I think that is an understatement.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very unique set of circumstances that brought us together. When you let yourself be this open with others, how can you not become tied together a bit internally? I just can't imagine sharing some of the stuff that we've shared and not feeling connected.
Yeah, I've shared stuff with these, you know, two that I haven't shared with my family.
And I believe we're so connected that when the other one is hurting, we feel the pain and we hurt right along.
Not long after I left for Seattle, the three moms put on their first annual Bakersfield 3 charity event, a golf tournament titled Tea for Three. True to their mission they'd began a year earlier, they were raising money for specialized sonar equipment to search waterways. You might remember back in summer 2018, when the female leg was found in the lake, Jane thought it belonged to her daughter Bailey and was horrified that more thorough searching couldn't be done to locate the rest of the body, and that search crews had to borrow equipment from the neighboring county of Tulare. Even though the leg turned out not to belong to her daughter, it was still just as important to her and the other moms to get the equipment for their community of Kern County. And they were going to ensure they got the best of the best by using their secret weapon, Jane.
We all three researched different equipment, yeah, and we decided on the equipment. Then we let Jane take over. Yes, and we are proud to say...
We are proud to say...
Jane negotiated a price that is lower than what they do at their seminars.
For anybody.
For anybody. Any law enforcement agency and the government uses this equipment. So we figured if it was good enough for the government...
Yeah, the military uses it.
It was good enough for Kern County. And
so
we're happy that our equipment is better than Tulare. And now they can borrow from us.
And it has a Bakersfield 3 sticker on it.
Thanks
to Search and Rescue. Mm-hmm. They put our sticker on it.
The first fundraiser was a huge success. Using the proceeds, as well as a few thousand dollars from their own pockets, the moms bought the sonar equipment. Not long after, COVID-19 hit, and everything everywhere shut down. It was the first time in 2 years the moms had essentially been forced to slow down. But eventually, late May 2020, the county decided they could do an outdoor event to formally unveil the sonar equipment and thank the Bakersfield 3 charity. It was going to be such a happy day. Most of us can reflect and remember that back then, it was significant for anyone to get out of the house and have a good day. But especially for the moms, who could count the number of, quote, happy days on one hand that they had had in the last 2 years.
We were very proud of our community for coming together behind us to make that happen. And we felt like it was a move in the right direction to put victims and their families first. And it started out a very nice day.
And it ended as a horrible day.
It was a beautiful spring morning. The three mothers proudly stood side by side in their matching Bakersfield 3 polo shirts as the sheriff and search and rescue crews spoke to a crowd of media. But this would not be the story that any reporter there would end up covering that day.
On behalf of the sheriff's office and on behalf of the county that we serve, ladies, thank you very
thank
much
you.
For your involvement. You're tenacious and you keep us on our toes, and we need that occasionally.
17 news crews captured the press conference.
We've had to borrow equipment from Tulare County to have any success at all. We didn't have the funds to go out and buy our own sonar equipment.
Kern County Sheriff Donnie Youngblood said in addition to the mothers raising money for the sonar equipment, they'd also brought to law enforcement's attention Andy Rapid DNA. You may remember that's the technology the mothers found that did the DNA testing on Micah's arm and the leg in the lake. Sheriff Youngblood announced the county would be pushing to purchase the specialized DNA equipment.
And what we're hoping to do is not have families like this have to wait weeks and weeks to find out whether a body part belongs to their missing loved one. So if we can find the body or the parts and then get rapid DNA and on the same day be able to tell them, yes, it's your relative or no, it's not. And that's an additional $100,000 a year for rapid DNA. But, you know, if your child is missing, $100,000 a year is absolutely nothing.
It was everything the mothers had worked so hard for. The countless hours they'd spent lobbying to county and city officials had paid off.
I'd like to thank KLEA. They were our partners in our very first golf tournament.
The moms took turns speaking to the crowd.
This has been a long time coming for us. It feels like a long time, but we knew early on that we wanted water rescue and having our own equipment so we didn't have to borrow from other counties with as much water as we have. Thank you so much for coming out and helping us celebrate today.
Yeah, hope I can get through this without crying. The sonar is very near and dear to my heart. It's something Baker so needs, and I know it's going to help a lot of families get what they need to find loved ones faster. So thank you very much for your support. I'm so grateful.
Meanwhile, during the press conference, Di had gotten a text from a reporter who dropped a bombshell on her.
To be having such a happy moment donating equipment that our county so needed. And so we were so excited, but it was hard for me knowing what I knew to sit there and know that how Jane was going to feel or think I knew and how Cheryl, it was just like, here we go again, you know, just another curveball.
After the press conference wrapped, Cheryl and Lance got the call first. Di knew the news needed to come from law enforcement.
I was in my car with Jane, and it was very difficult for me not to say anything. Meanwhile, Cheryl and Lance had been taken to the Bakersfield Police Department.
I think Di kind of knew what was going on, but she didn't want to tell me. And I go, well, I'm just going to call Garrett And he answered, and I go, what's going on? And he says, well, can you come down here right now? We need to talk to you.
Cheryl and Lance were the first to be led into a conference room with Sergeant Garrett and prosecutors to tell them they were filing charges in Micah's case.
I remember them saying a first-degree murder charge against Matt Queen. They told us that they were going to move forward with charging him with first-degree murder and kidnapping. And so at this point, right, your ears kind of go numb. Like, you're just kind of sitting there and you're just like, you're letting it kind of wash over you. And then I just remember hearing someone say, and we're going to charge Bailey as well.
It was a stunning revelation. Bailey was being charged with Micah's murder.
And I remember thinking, you know, just kind of looking around the room like, what is, you know, what? Have you talked to Jane? No, we're going to talk to her next before we go to the press conference or something like that. And I was like, well, that would be really important for her to know that, because that's horrible, that it's just going to devastate her.
The news was merely impossible to comprehend, and it all happened very fast. After getting the news, a suit in the room explained that in about 15 minutes, the prosecutor's office would be holding a press conference to announce it all publicly.
We're just trying to tuck all these little bits of information in our brains. And then we felt like, okay, time to go. Gotta get Jane in here. Gotta go. It just felt very rushed. And I just felt so like I was on a roller coaster, just like, I don't even know which way is up.
Cheryl and Lance were ushered out just before Jane was brought in, about to receive the news that changed all of their lives forever.
So it was about 10 till 2, and the press conference was supposed to happen at 2. So it was like 10 minutes before I'm being told that my daughter's being charged with the murder of Micah, along with Matt Queen. And it was just like disbelief. I've been, you know, crying and I'm asking, you know, why they can't tell me. It was a room full of people in the lobby, detectives, the chief of police. And then kind of like everybody, it's like, okay, we're done. You need to go because we got to go to the press conference, and they didn't want us at the press conference. So by the time I got back out to the car at like 2, it was already going, and my family had already heard it, my friends. I wasn't given the chance to tell my family, hey, this is going to happen.
Meanwhile, Cheryl and Lance, still in shock, were driving home, which is a long drive outside of Bakersfield.
And so we have an hour and a half to scream and cry and, you know, just very primal, very much a very, very angry, very pain-filled drive home. We get home, Di called us maybe and said, you know, you need to see the actual press conference that the DA did.
In a fog, Cheryl turned on the TV. 17 news crews captured DA Cynthia Zimmer announcing the charges against Matthew Queen and Bailey.
The charges involve murder, conspiracy to commit murder, torture, kidnapping.
It wasn't until we got home and listened to that newscast that we heard the word torture. The hardest part about that was hearing that there had been torture. Then we see it on the news. I felt like somebody socks you in the gut and you lose all, you can't breathe.
That day, I don't remember who called who or what, if anything, was said. I just remember sitting at my kitchen table and hearing Cheryl's sobs through the phone. I don't think there's any way to really describe that kind of grief, that kind of cry. Hearing it leaves you with a deep pit in your stomach and an aching in your heart, a sort of paralyzed feeling of helplessness. My call with Jane that day was different, though. There were no tears or even real acknowledgement of what she was told.
She sounded flustered and frantic, speaking in a fast, high-pitched tone, repeating how she has a lot of questions that prosecutors and police haven't answered. It was brief. She was in shock. My old colleagues at 17 News were also stunned. Here's anchor and reporter Alex Fisher.
You have someone who is missing. No signs of her whatsoever. And now she is being charged with murder. It took this case to the next level.
17 News reporter Jason Katowski.
Hearing Bailey's name, that was probably the biggest surprise so far in a case that's been full of them, frankly, from the beginning. I was very surprised at that because I thought at that point that most people believed that Bailey had been killed.
The first question reporters asked the district attorney was, does this mean Bailey is not presumed to be dead? Do investigators think she's alive?
She is unaccounted for. And because she is unaccounted for and not declared deceased, she has been charged as a criminal defendant in this case.
Then when I got the explanation, I was like, okay, they're covering all the bases here in the event that she is alive somewhere and hiding out.
But nothing said at that press conference made the news about Bailey being charged any less shocking.
For so long, she had been, claimed as one or been called one of the victims in this case. So to hear that one of the victims actually took part allegedly in the killing of Wholesome Bake, that did surprise me. I was not expecting that. I was waiting to hear charges against someone, but I did not expect it would be Bailey.
The someone Jason is referring to is Matt Queen. And frankly, most of us were expecting he'd be charged with Bailey's murder. Here he was now charged with Micah's murder, with Bailey as his co-conspirator.
We're still looking at what happened to her. And then same time, we had information came in that she might be involved. It was a bizarre twist in the case.
Sergeant Garrett had to keep that earth-shattering twist to himself for a very long time, while also having a front row seat to how close the moms got.
It added definitely complexity to the case.
Here's 17 News anchor and reporter Alex Fisher again.
When Bailey was charged with Micah's murder, it complicated the whole case. And I think all of us went to, what are the moms thinking? How does this change how they work together? And we've all seen them as three moms who are dealing with a tragedy, losing their children. And for all of a sudden, just like that, to have a mom realize that, oh, my daughter is now being charged with the murder of this other mom's son. That's a big deal. And that was a huge game changer.
Here's retired Detective Bill Darby, who'd looked into the case.
And I thought, oh my gosh, these women are doing such a good thing being together and supporting each other. What's this going to do? Distinctly remember, as soon as I heard that, it was, oh crap, how's Cheryl going to handle this? How's Jane going to handle this?
Sergeant Garrett wasn't sure how they'd handle any part of it either, starting from asking them to come meet that day.
It had to have been pretty intense for you to...
I had no idea what the reaction or the emotions would be, but like I said, it was something that needed to be done, and it is what it is at that point, so we had to tell them what we knew. I was curious to see if their relationship would hold after that.
Everyone was, so I asked the three of them. This interview was about a year and a half after the charges were filed.
Did it change the dynamic of the group? The charges?
I think it caused us to pause. We needed to pause for a while. We just had to let it lie for a few.
And I think the dynamics changed a little bit in that it was Cheryl and I talking, and then it was Jane and I talking, and I was the buffer. I was the listener. I would listen and try to help.
And it was never anything about Jane.
It was never bad because we were both feeling bad. And I would say, have you talked to Jane? And she'd say, no, I haven't, talked to her for days. And I'd talk to Jane, have you talked to Cheryl? No, I haven't talked to her for days.
What am I going to say?
There's this little bit of a distance. Not that they had anything bad to say. I just think
it was weird.
It was just an uncomfortable. So I was the middle person.
It was just weird.
It was just weird, as Cheryl says. And frankly, I think it still is to some degree. All this time later, it feels like it's still not easy for them to discuss it. But particularly when the news was still fresh, Jane and Cheryl didn't know what to say to each other. What would anyone say in their shoes? When Cheryl and I spoke about this one-on-one, I asked her, during this period that her and Jane weren't really speaking, how did she feel towards Jane?
I was immediately worried about her. Because I'm a mom, and I know how that would have affected me if our tables were turned. And I knew that she was just going to collapse under the weight of that news.
It's deeply complicated. As her close friend, Cheryl knew Jane needed comfort and support. She needed someone to hold her hand and tell her, of course your daughter would never hurt anyone. But being the mother of Bailey's alleged victim, Cheryl wasn't sure she was the one to give her that at the time.
Because I just didn't want to rub her face in it. And I think I said these exact words to Di in a phone call was, Micah just needs to have his moment. Okay, this just needs to be about Micah for a minute, right? Could we just be, you know, can we not just let Micah have this for a minute? Can it stop being about Bailey for a second? And yet, even while saying that, I was thinking to myself, I would be doing the same thing. I would have been, Micah would have never done that. I can't imagine it. You know, I mean, I would have had all the words that came out of Jane's mouth would have been my words. And so even while I was saying, okay, can we just throw the brakes on and let this shake out? Because we're still reeling from even finding out. I mean, we were still just crushed by the fact that it was long and horrible. Yeah, we were just still dealing with all that it meant for Micah. This had been done on purpose, planned in advance by whoever it was. We were reeling under it. And we never blamed Jane, never thought that it would have anything to do with any of the rest of her family. That's not something you know. Even if she did it and did it cold in a cold-hearted way and all these other things, it doesn't mean that we don't love and support her family or work with her family. So, you know, it's just complex. It was just a weird time, and we needed, I think Di said it, you know, we just needed to let it breathe for a little bit. We just needed a little distance, kind of radio silence, you know, to keep any of us, either of us, Jane or our family, from just coming unglued in front of a microphone, right? Just losing it completely in public, because none of us wanted that for the other. You know, we still are very protective of each other.
I also talked to Jane one-on-one about how this time was for her. She said since it happened during the height of COVID, she was already feeling very isolated.
It was probably maybe good that I was by myself because when you're processing and trying to grieve and deal with all the stuff that you know in your head, sometimes you have to go a little bit crazy. And you don't want people around to see you do your ugly cry and ask God, why did you let this happen? I'm not real religious, but I always heard people talk about hearing God telling you what to do. And it would be like, okay, you know, I'm in the shower on the floor with the water, you know, dripping over you, crying and asking and taking your anger out on him because you have to take it out on somebody. I guess that's why I felt like Lance and Cheryl were angry at me because I'm the closest thing to Bailey.
Was that difficult first time you saw them after the event?
Yes. Difficult in the sense that you know, what are they thinking? Like, they say they didn't blame me, but you just don't know what you think. You feel and think so many different things, and you're trying to get answers, but you don't get answers.
When me and the three moms talked about this all together, Cheryl addressed Jane's fears.
This is where everybody out there, Communication 101. Lance and I never thought it was an issue because it wasn't Jane's responsibility. She didn't have to answer for those questions. But we knew that it was weird for her to talk about. And so we didn't want to really bring it up.
And I think it's because
we don't want you to have to think about
it. Like on TV and stuff, it's like, oh, that's the mom of the murderer. Look at her. It's her fault her kid turned out like this. And you already have guilt about your child missing and what happened to her and if you could have done things different. And then it's like, you just, you know, think, what did I do? But I know it wasn't her.
How do you deal with that, Jane? How did you deal with it?
I'm still dealing with it. You know, I have my days where it's like, right now I spend a lot of my time in my head trying not to think about stuff.
Was it difficult for you to think of what you wanted to say to Cheryl?
Well, all I would ever say is, I'm sorry. I don't know. I won't know until the truth comes out, what really happened, you know?
And we always said, it's not your place to be sorry. You did not hurt us.
I asked Di, who was a bit of a liaison between Jane and Cheryl, if she was worried what would happen to the three of them after the news broke.
I knew our dynamic would change, but I never have once felt that it would pull us apart. Not once.
To this day, people still say to me, I don't get it. How did they do it? How did they work through this and stay close? Here's Sergeant Garrett.
Ultimately, they came to the understanding that, yeah, just because maybe her daughter did something doesn't, you know, it's not Jane's fault. Her daughter was grown, made her own decisions, so Cheryl decided not to hold that against Jane. So they did have that bond. I mean, if it happened earlier on in the case, I don't know how that would have affected them. But it was definitely an uncomfortable thing for them to probably go through themselves personally.
17 News reporter Jason Katowski.
Well, I guess there's just a lot of strength with the three of them because, you know, you'd think from an outside perspective looking in, is like, how could, you know, the other moms still be friends with Bailey's mom, knowing or with the allegation that she took part in this murder. So I think this shows that there's a lot of understanding between those three, and they must also consider her a victim too, I believe.
Here's Bill Darby again, the retired detective and my friend who'd come to spend a lot of time with the three moms during his investigation.
I was really so incredibly inspired by Cheryl. She really was a diamond in that thing. I could not believe her grace in hearing that this lady that, you know, we formed this bond with and we're so close, her daughter killed my son. But they stood strong knowing that those kids were all involved in a mess. You know, so I was really, really inspired by her.
I genuinely believe that Cheryl never had any feelings of anger or resentment towards Jane, but I also think it's a wildly complicated, somewhat incomprehensible situation to try to navigate for both of them. As I've said before, it is not an easy topic. Even with how open and raw I feel the three of them are with me, I still feel a bit of a pause when I bring it up. I get the feeling that Cheryl and Jane are still searching for the right words. This next clip of a conversation between Cheryl and I is what I feel is the most candid I've ever heard her be about the situation. It started with me discussing my thoughts on the day the charges were announced.
I was like, how are they going to deal with this? I knew you guys would, but it was just how is this going to go?
I use the word difficult a lot because it was difficult, but that word doesn't even come close to
covering it, right? I don't even know what the right word would be, but it was a near thing. We almost didn't survive that.
Hearing her say that made me appreciate even more how incredible it is that the three of them did survive it. And from the day the charges were announced, they never broke their united front.
We make decisions together. We made a decision to pretty much go silent for a while because we felt it was important to let things kind of settle and do their own course. And it might have been hard. It was hard for me. I know it was hard for Jane, but we felt that it was, we were doing this for Micah, that it was important.
Yeah, it was. So that's the kind of care and concern that, you know, that we built up for each other.
The reason you haven't heard Jane fiercely defending her daughter is because the moms were given a fierce warning that if Jane publicly defended Bailey, it could be interpreted as Jane saying police and prosecutors had it all wrong, and that could in turn cast doubt on their case against Matthew Queen and hurt their chances of getting a jury to convict him for Micah's murder. So the moms made a pact to say nothing. For Jane, in some ways, not being able to defend Bailey was almost as difficult as hearing the horrific allegations in the first place. But with the support from one another, the three of them stayed silent and just rode through it.
In fact, it's kind of brought us closer together in a kind of a strange way.
Dice's leading up to the charges, the three of them had supported each other as they suffered through the worst pain a parent could go through.
No one wants to be the mother of someone that's been dismembered. No one wants to be the mother of someone that's shot. And no one wants to be the mother of a daughter who's never found.
Dice's Bailey being charged with Micah's murder was a new kind of pain Jane had to endure.
And no one wants to be the mother if it's brought out in court. We haven't seen the evidence, and we haven't heard Bailey's side of it. But if Bailey were found guilty, no one wants to be the mother of a daughter that has helped take the life of someone that was their friend.
There were so many questions then, but of course, the one top of everyone's mind. Was Bailey guilty?
Of people who still stand by her being innocent, and then there's that 10% that switched from, oh, this is so sad, she's a missing person, she's a victim, to she did it and she deserves to be missing.
That's next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from L.A. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.